Welcome to ITE 1, Class 2, Module 10. This is our Communications and Troubleshooting Lecture. Before I start, does anyone have any questions? We're going to go through this fairly quickly because most of us have been in the Discovery Lecture yesterday, and a lot of it's the same. So it's kind of a review for most of us. If you need more clarification on any of this, email us at caviinstructors@gots.net or listen to the Discovery 1 Module 9 lecture that happened yesterday. Any questions? All right, cool. So troubleshooting is as much about communicating with the customer as it is about knowing how to fix a computer. This chapter will teach you to use good communication skills as confidently as you use a screwdriver. Or that's what it claims to do. Having good communication skills will help to enhance your troubleshooting skills. Good communication skills and expert troubleshooting skills take time and experience to develop well, and they should go hand in hand. Technicians' hardware, software, and OS knowledge increases, their ability to quickly determine a problem and find a solution will improve. So, as with anything, the more you practice with good communication skills, the more effective you will become when working with customers. And we'll give you guys shots at practicing very soon. A knowledgeable technician who uses good communication skills will always be in demand in the job market. Most people who need a computer problem fixed are likely to be feeling stressed. So, I mean, come on, think about the last time your computer was broken or anything was broken. Armando, you had a network problem yesterday. Didn't you feel stressed?
No, I actually didn't because I kind of had an idea of what I needed to do, but I wanted to get more clarification. But unfortunately, I don't recommend anybody facing the experience I had to face with when it came to the salesman.
Okay, so that salesman didn't have very good communication skills. Do you want to tell us about your experience with the salesperson?
Well, it's not that he didn't have communication skill. He just wasn't all there, in simple terms.
Armando had the fun experience of meeting up with a quite wasted salesman, apparently. So,
exactly. I did not want to say it for the recording lecture purposes, that's why.
Oh, no. That's a very good example of unprofessional behavior, and that needs to be talked about.
Then in that case, I'll go ahead and say it then. What happened was originally the network went down, and I had to move the wire from the living room all the way through the outside into my room. And so in order to accomplish that, I had to cut the original RJ45 internet connectivity. Well, to make the story short, I took a trip down with my brother-in-law to the Radio Shack. When I got there, I noticed that the salesman was, like, walking kind of weird and slurring his words. And as I got closer to the salesman, he smelled like, as he was drinking, like, a 12 or so case of beer. And to make the story short, I mean, in the end, it worked out well because I got the stuff at a cheaper discount. But just something I would not recommend for people to do.
He's really not doing, making a good impression to you for his employer. And, he's just lost his employer money by giving you a discount because he was drunk. So, yeah, not very professional at all. And that didn't make you feel very good, and you weren't very confident in his abilities, were you?
Nope.
Okay, so unlike Armando's salesman, we want to try and establish a good rapport with the customer. A relaxed customer is more likely to be able to provide all of the information needed to determine the source of a problem. You have access to several communication and research tools, or you should. Any of these resources can be used to help gather information for the troubleshooting process. You've got personal experience. Some companies provide scripts. You can also find them on websites. Search engines, online FAQs, co-workers, support vendors, diagnostic repair tools, manufacturer manuals, and email. And you get to actually do some research about these in the one worksheet that you've got. That is worksheet 10.1, Technicians Resources. And you basically get to pick a product, and you get to research up FAQs for it, and various support resources to fix that that product.
Sorry, I had to kill Trine. It had to be done.
No problem. It's fine. I really don't care that it died. So you guys can pick whatever, preferably not a hard drive, because we've been doing a lot of work with hard drives. So basically any computer component that is not a hard drive. If you need me to pick a computer component for you, just write and I'll be happy to do that. But if you've got something you're working on fixing and you want to take the time and fill out the sheet for that, that's absolutely fine. Just please not a hard drive, because we've been doing so much work on the hard drives. Okay.
In fact, Amanda might want to do a network cable, given that the experience of it is so fresh with it.
No, I don't think so. I don't want to deal with that one. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to quickly talk about good communication skills and professional behavior. When you're talking to a customer on the phone or in person, it is important to communicate well and to represent yourself professionally. Your professionalism and good communication skills will enhance your credibility with the customer. Drunk guy at Radio Shack, not so credible, as an example. You want to dress nicely. Don't just wear shorts and t-shirts to work. Your company may have a dress code, and it might talk about that in your company handbook. If you're working on your own, use your common sense, guys. If you've got money and you're making good money, what I would suggest you do is go to a department store such as Macy's and have one of the salespeople help you pick out a few outfits that are wearable. They usually have good fashion sense. They're not going to get you anything really, really nasty or too young looking, and it'll look very professional. They're usually good with that kind of thing. I've done it before. Successful technicians control their own reactions and emotions from one customer call to the next. One of the first tasks of the technician is to determine the type of computer problem that the customer is experiencing. Remember these three rules in the beginning of any of your conversations. No, that is, call the customer by name if you can. And sometimes you won't know the customer's name, but if you can, and if you do, try to call them by their name and use it once or twice throughout the call. Relate.
Does anybody hate it when they get your name and they use it like once or twice a sentence? Oh, that really annoys me.
Yeah, that's super annoying. Once or twice a call. You don't have to do it every sentence. Okay, the next rule is relate. Use brief communications to create one-to-one connections between you and your customer. Possibly, and this is can be quite dangerous, how you doing is okay, but you might just get, with some of our social callers, all sorts of stuff you really didn't need to know. Understand. Determine the customer's level of knowledge about the computer and how to effectively communicate with the customer. So, listen to the way they're talking. If they start saying the little thingy isn't working, they're probably not very experienced at using the computer. If they start talking about their RJ45 cables, they are probably quite experienced. And you're going to act accordingly, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. It is important to practice active listening skills. Do not interrupt the customer. Listen carefully to what the other person is saying and let them finish their thoughts. After the customer has explained the problem, clarify what the customer has said. Ask some follow-up questions if you need to, and use all of the information to complete the work order. A really good way to clarify is to summarize what the customer said. So you'll say, if I understand you right, you seem to be having trouble connecting to the internet, and you were able to connect to the internet yesterday. And then let them say yes or no. Handle customers with respect and prompt attention on a phone call. When you're using a phone, you need to know how to use the phone system correctly. They should train you on this in your company, or if you have your own phone system. It's really important that before you start taking calls, you know how to place a customer on hold, transfer them without losing the call, and know how to get them to voicemail if that's what needs to happen. Because there is nothing worse than being hung up on by a customer support technician who has no idea how to use the phone system. That really makes for an angry customer, and we don't want that. On a call, try to help the customer focus and communicate the problem. Part of your job as a technician is to focus the customer during the phone call. When the customer stays focused on the problem, you control the call, which is what we want. We don't want the customer controlling the call. You're not going to get the information you need. Do not take any comments personally, and do not retaliate with any comments or criticism. It's not your fault. You're trying to help them with their problem, and you did not cause it. So don't take it personally. They just need somewhere to vent, and they're probably really frustrated that they can't work right now. So try to understand that. If you stay calm with the customer, finding a solution to the problem will remain the focal point of the call. So don't get upset with them. It's not worth it. Stay positive. Focus on what you can do to help. No, I can't. Instead of saying, no, I can't send a technician today, say, I'll be sending a technician tomorrow, and I'll put you on the waiting list. So if something does become available, I'll let you know right away. Convey your interest in helping the customer. Don't sound bored with their problem, and at least pretend you care. It really does make a difference. Here are things not to do. Avoid minimizing the customer's problems. They think it's a really big deal, even though you may not. Avoid using jargon, abbreviations, and acronyms unless they are an experienced customer. If they're a really experienced customer, doing this might make them feel more important. Avoid a negative attitude or tone of voice. If you sound negative, that's going to just get them more upset. Avoid arguing with the customer or becoming defensive. As I said, remember, this is probably not your fault. Avoid being judgmental, insulting, or calling customers names. Avoid distractions or interruptions when talking with customers. Avoid unnecessary and abrupt holds. When you put a customer on hold, let the customer finish speaking first. Explain that you will put the customer on hold and why. Ask the customer for permission to do so. Tell your customer how long they will be on hold and explain what you will be doing during that time. Avoid transfer without consent and proper explanation of the purpose of the transfer. When you transfer a call, let the customer finish speaking, of course. Explain that you have to transfer their call to whom and why. Tell them the number you are transferring them to. This is really helpful in case there is a problem with your phone system, and with VoIP systems there definitely can be, so that they can call back if possible and get to the right department. Ask the customer for permission to transfer the call. Thank the customer and explain the details of the transfer. And make sure to tell the new technician the details of the case so that the customer doesn't have to repeat themselves again. Asking for permission to transfer or put them on hold, as you guys probably know, is kind of a courtesy thing. You're going to have to do it anyway. So it really is kind of courtesy. And you're still going to do it if they say no or are really angry. You have to do it anyway. Avoid negative remarks about the other technician to the customer, even though that technician really may not know what they're doing. You have to support the other employees in your company, and that is, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. Any questions on that? Cool. Okay, we've got many different types of difficult customers. The list that we're going to talk about may not be all of the customers that you can possibly have that will be will be difficult, and some of them you're even lucky enough to get combinations of the traits. You need to be able to recognize these traits in the customers in order to properly handle calls, and you will learn to do this, and you'll get some practice with this in a little bit. A talkative customer A talkative customer discusses everything except the problem on the call. They often use the call as an opportunity to socialize and are difficult to focus on the problem. So what you do with these customers is allow them to talk for 1 minute, and then you're going to gather as much information as possible. Politely refocus the customer if they get off track. This is an exception to the rule of never interrupting a customer. After the 1 minute, you can interrupt the customer and ask questions. Ask as many closed-ended questions as you need to once you've regained control of the call. Avoid conversation that is not related to the problem. And basically, you just want to get as much information as you can and try to make sure this customer does not go off on too many tangents. Because if you don't, you'll be sitting there all day. The next customer we're going to talk about is a rude customer. They complain during the call and often make negative comments about the product and services and the technician. As I said, don't take these people personally. It's not about you. Listen very carefully, as you do not want to ask them to repeat any information. Follow a step-by-step approach to determine and solve the problem. If the customer has a favorite technician, try to contact the technician to see if they can take the call, and be very, very grateful if they will. Apologize for the wait time and the inconvenience, even if there has been no wait time. It's not going to cost you anything to apologize, and it might make them feel just a little bit better. Reiterate that you want to solve the problem as quickly as possible. Avoid asking the customer to complete any obvious steps. Avoid being rude, even if they are rude to you. I'm not sure how much I agree with the don't ask them to complete too many obvious steps, because sometimes it's the most obvious things that are the problem. I don't know, what do you think, Carrie?
It depends on the nature of the...
Okay.
Yeah, go.
Okay. That would do it, and that's why I say sometimes you do want to ask about some of the obvious things, because you might save yourself and them so much time, especially if they don't seem very technically savvy.
Even the technically savvy people can miss the obvious.
Oh, yeah. All right. Next, we've got angry customers. They talk loud during the call and often try to speak when you are speaking. They usually are frustrated that they have a problem and upset that they have to call you to fix it. And these people can be quite abusive. When we do our angry technicians, we don't want to be too abusive. We want to keep it PG-13 or below here. Let the technician tell you their problem without interruption, even if they're angry. This allows them to vent and get it off their chest. And they're going to be release some of their anger, and they may be much easier to work with. Sympathize with the customer's problem. Apologize for the wait time or inconvenience. Avoid putting this customer on hold and/or transferring them. Avoid talking at length about the cause of the problem. Focus on solving the problem. Okay, a knowledgeable customer. These can be some of the most difficult customers to deal with because they think they know everything. They want to speak with a technician that is equally experienced in computers. They usually try to control the call and do not want to speak with a level 1 technician because they're beneath them.
Been there, done that, and believe me, the level 1 technicians are beneath you, but don't let the notes confuse you on that point. There's nothing worse than, and if you're doing this, obviously follow what the notes say, but there's nothing worse than talking to a level 1 technician and they're asking you, so did the lights go on the back of the modem? Well, I'm not even using the modem you people supply, and I've told you that 3 times, but don't let that get in the way of the call.
If you are a level 1 technician, try to set up a conference call with a level 2 technician. Tell the customer the overall approach to what you are trying to verify. Avoid using a step-by-step approach. avoid asking the customer to check the obvious. And I don't quite agree with that so much, because sometimes it's the obvious, even if you think you know it all. An inexperienced customer has difficulty describing the problem.
Now, their point is there that if they're reading a script and the only thing they're doing is reading a script, sometimes when somebody who is experienced has come on, they will give you a list of things that they've already checked. So you'll say, I've already tried turning off the modem, I've already tried turning it back on, I've already tried removing the line filters and replacing them, I've already tried disconnecting and reconnecting the phone line. So what they're saying there is, as a technician, don't ask somebody whether they've turned it off and turned it back on again if the customer has already said that they've done that.
Fair enough. Yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty common, actually. You ask them what they've already tried. If you've got something to take notes, you often take notes on what they've already tried. And then if there's a list of things that they've tried and you want more information, you can say, okay, well, when you did number four, what happened? And that often tends to make them a lot happier. But I think that the key to that point is that if somebody experienced rings up and gives you a whole lot of information, there's nothing worse than being asked, you know, oh, so have you turned it off and turned it back on again? It's like, well, yes, I told you that 2 minutes ago.
And it's not cool to say, well, just try it with me so I make sure you do it right. That's not okay.
You can do that. It just depends on whether every other solution has been exhausted. Sometimes you do have to go back through and try it again with the customer on the line if possible. But you've got to justify to the customer why you'd want them to do that.
They always do that to me when I call up, Charlie. They'd be like, well, unplug it and plug it back in with me on the line. Yeah, I know how to unplug and plug in a cable. Anyway. The final one we have, and these are very hard to deal with as well, are inexperienced customers who are not able to communicate errors they encounter. Use a simple step-by-step process of instructions. Speak in plain terms. Avoid using industry jargon, really do with these people. And definitely for them, they already feel pretty bad and pretty stressed out, so avoid being condescending or belittling to them. Okay, we're going to quickly talk about netiquette. Can anyone tell me what is netiquette? Internet etiquette, yes. On the internet, we need to act as if we are seeing these people in real life or on the phone. A lot of people feel like the internet is a shield and they can be whoever they want and as nasty as they want. Well, that's really not true, and we shouldn't be doing that. We should be pleasant and polite. We want to begin each email as if you you begin each letter or phone call, even in a thread, with an appropriate greeting, and you want to sign off with an appropriate salutation. Never send chain letters through the email. That just clogs up bandwidth and it's just a waste. Do not send or reply to flames. Does anyone know what a flame is?
It's when you attack somebody really harshly and unreasonably.
Yeah, usually on a mailing list or forum. Always use mixed case lettering, and this is something that people don't realize. You want to avoid using all uppercase lettering, since this is considered shouting. It looks really big and is very hard to read. And you want to make sure, I've done this before by accident, and somebody's just said, do you know that your caps lock is on? And somehow, I don't know why I didn't realize it was. Yeah.
Actually, that's because what happens, actually, is what blind people generally do is the shift key is optional when you're in MSN, because who needs to press that down? We just type what we want. And usually JAWS will beep if you press shift in a letter if you've already got caps lock on, but if you're going to be the lazy shift sort of person, you never push the shift key down to begin with, so you don't know the caps lock's on.
No, I do use the shift key. I'm not sure what... I guess my character, my typing characters were off or something. I don't know how it happened, but somebody said it. Hey, you're shouting. Oh, okay. I guess my caps lock is locked down.
Like, I had a keyboard, and my shift used to constantly get stuck down, so I'd be typing... I mean, that's even worse than the caps lock. You can't even really tell. I mean, well, you can.
Yeah, that's what it was. I don't know what... Yeah, because usually you should hear that. Even in emails, even in anything you ever write, I mean, except MSN messages where you really can't do this, easily. Check grammar and spelling. Please, guys. Really, really important. We went to this presentation, and actually this guy's going to come in on Friday, and he's a really good speaker.
Friday week.
Yep, a week from Friday. And honestly, this guy is awesome. And he was saying that they hire people, and one of the things that they look for is your writing style, and how well you can write, and how you spell check, how well your grammar is. So it's very important, and we're going to try and really focus on writing in this class. And if we see you not spell checking, we're going to call you up on it, because employers are looking for people that can write neatly. And you guys, if you come on next week Friday for the social, you'll get to meet this guy. Really cool. Provided an excellent, excellent presentation on what people are looking for in the workplace for us last Friday at the Cisco conference.
Also, the justification that he gave for correct grammar and spelling was actually because people need to write design documents and reports that need to be submitted to management. So those reports needed to be readable and legible. So whilst on the one hand it's all well and good to throw your hands up as a blind person and say, but I learned Braille, I can't spell. Unfortunately, employers, if you're going to produce written material, are not going to be happy with the work you submit. And nobody in this particular course, but I know of a few people personally in real life that their spelling is quite bad, and that certainly hinders their employment prospects, because they can't be relied on to produce high quality written material as part of any job description.
And they're totally smart people, so that's the problem. And you guys, you don't have to be the world's best spellers. We live in the age of spell checkers. The spell checker is your friend. Learn to use it, and use it often. Okay? The next thing is be ethical. You know when you're working on that tech support call, and the person is too tight to buy software? Don't suggest a crack to them. It's just not okay. Or an email in a support email. Never mail or post anything you wouldn't say to someone in person. Because guess what? This stuff that gets on the internet lives on forever. You can Google people and find some really interesting stuff about them. And if you Google certain people, you'll find posts that they would probably rather not have you find that they posted on mailing lists. These things go down in forever. Ever, almost. So, you don't want to put anything out that you don't want to follow you around for the next 20 years, or possibly the rest of your life. Remember that even though you're sitting in front of your computer, you are dealing with people. They're human too, and they have emotions. Adhere to the same standards of behavior that you would follow in the rest of your life. Know where you are in cyberspace. If you're on the kids zone, you know, you may want to not be as crass as you might be with on a forum, on a gaming forum with all of your drinking buddies. Respect others' time and bandwidth. And this is really important, and you know what? I am an American, so I can say this. As Americans in general, we don't do this. We'll just send a 5-meg song over the email. And you know what? If you've got people around the world, it's going to take them forever to download that. And we don't really think about it.
Actually, the bigger problem with sending 5-meg songs via email is if anybody's aware of how POP3 works, there is no resumption for file attachments, so you have to pull 5 meg down in one TCP connection. If you have flaky internet and you cannot completely pull that message down, you'll end up with a situation where messages are stuck on the server and can't be retrieved by Lookout Distress, because Lookout Distress does not handle network interruptions gracefully. So, say for example, you did get emailed a 6 meg song on dial-up, and yes, I did have that happen to to me. A friend of mine had that happen. Luckily, we had a stable connection. It took 36 minutes to download that. And if that connection had been broken once in that 36 minutes, we would have had to start again.
Share expert knowledge. If you're going to share knowledge, please know what you're talking about. Respect the privacy of others. No internet stalking, sorry guys. And forgive others for mistakes. Forgive the newbies for not quite knowing what they are doing. They really are probably trying to learn. And can anyone else think of any other general rules for netiquette that they can think of?
Maybe I missed it, but chat speak.
Oh, yeah. Don't use chat speak when you're on the job as a technician. LOL is not acceptable. And you know what else isn't acceptable, even if you are in a social setting? Using LOL at the end of every sentence. Not so cool.
Or
I was
also thinking saying things like... Sorry, I was just going to say, also saying something that is completely offensive... and then going lol at the end of it and hoping that the lol is going to make your completely offensive statement okay, because lol fixes everything.
I was thinking more of things like PLZ and THX and BRB and WB, and you probably wouldn't say BRB, but, you know, just examples like...
Oh, people do.
Yeah. And a lot of these places are going to these text chat systems where you type in stuff. Your customer may use the chat speak. Don't follow their lead, because even though they do, it's just a bad habit to get into, and they might not understand the particular shorthand that you use, and you're just going to confuse them possibly. Anyone else?
There are actually some good documents on the net about netiquette and stuff. One of the other things that you need to keep in mind is there seems to be... Have you ever seen people who reply to a mailing list post that's 200 lines long, and they write, "Yeah, cool," at the top and hit send? The other thing that that personally boils my blood is people that have forwarded a message through six people. So not only is the subject line FWD, 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 but the greater thans are just about to take over the world, and stuff is like, you know, nested below six sets of headers. Guys, if you're going to forward something, take the time to tidy it up. This is a general thing, I'd say this to anyone. We don't want to read your headers, and we don't want to read all of the other crud, and we don't want to see the other, you know, six people that this is messaged to, for two reasons. One, because it takes time to actually read all the headers, and secondly, because if anybody ever does get hold of that message, you've just given them an incredible source of email addresses to be harvested by the spammers. So don't. that'd be my contribution to netiquette.
You don't. You can't stop someone else from doing that to your email address. You can do your part and clean up your emails and take out off the tops and not send everybody else's email addresses out. But you can't really stop anybody from doing it to you, unfortunately.
Well, it's a case of social education. You educate people on how to forward email and those sorts of things. The other thing you can do is you can send a message as an attachment rather than forwarding it inline, and that's often a setting in some mail packages. It does confuse some users, but they do get used to it eventually. That can cut down on a lot of the stuff. The other thing you can also do is try and educate people. One of the problems I had actually was a lot of blind people like top quoting, which means you put what you wanted before the whole message and then you have everybody else's message below it. And a lot of sighted people actually prefer inline quoting. So it's worth knowing what mailing lists want you to do and what the people on the lists want you to do. I have a problem with inline quoting sometimes, because if there's lots of surrounding text, it can take a long time to read what's there, but sometimes it does make things a lot clearer.
If you're going to inline quote, what you might want to do, especially on a blind list, if it's not the norm, is to warn people that that's what you have done, and it's going to make it a lot easier and people won't say, hey, you didn't have a message here. It's like, well, actually, I did. I just quoted in line. If you just say that your reply is within the message, that's going to help people out a lot. Okay. Ergonomics, since you're going to spend a lot of time at your desk, make sure your desk layout works well. Have your headset and phone in a position that is both easy to reach and easy to use. Your chair should be adjusted to a height that is comfortable. Adjust your computer screen to a comfortable angle so that you do not have to tilt your head up or down to see it. For us, make sure that our jaws isn't blaring too loudly in our ears. We don't want to go deaf before, 50. Make sure your keyboard and mouse are also in a comfortable position. You should not have to bend your wrist in order to type. If possible, try to minimize external noise. Stress management techniques and time management techniques. It is important to prioritize your activities. Make sure that you are carefully follow the business policy of your company. The company policy may state that you must take down calls first, even though they may be harder to solve. A down call usually means that a server is not working and the entire office or company is waiting for the problem to be resolved in order to resume business. If you have to call back a customer, make sure that you do it as close to the callback time as possible. Keep a list of callback customers and check them off one at a time as you complete these calls. This will ensure that you do not forget to call a customer. When dealing with many customers, do not give favorite customers faster or better service. When reviewing the call boards, do not take only the easy customer calls. Give the other technicians a break and take some of the more challenging ones yourself. Do not take calls for other technicians unless you have permission to do so. Of course, working in a call center can be very stressful. Here are some techniques to make your time there a little less stressful. Try and take a moment to compose yourself between calls. Every call should be independent of each other, and you should not carry any frustration from one call to the next. You may have to do some physical activity to relieve stress. You should stand up and take a short walk if you can. Do a few simple stretch movements or squeeze a tennis ball. Take a break if you can and try to relax. You'll then be ready to answer the next customer call effectively. Does anyone have any other appropriate activities or stress management techniques that they'd like to suggest?
Yeah, that was in the notes. They said take a short walk. I always find that, it's all good in theory. Some people are better at it than others, but it's very difficult not to let calls be cumulative, because after user number 10 that has rung you up, it can be quite difficult to reset the frustration level. All right, well, if that works to you, for the recording, you could pray to yourself.
We found some cool binaural beats, and if your company allows you to listen to music on your computer, some of the relaxing binaural beats or something might help you as well, if you're allowed to do something like that, if you're into that sort of thing. Okay, we're going to talk about observing service level agreements, or SLAs. When dealing with customers, it is important to adhere to their service level agreement. A service agreement, or SLA, is a contract that defines expectations between an organization or service provider or vendor to provide an agreed level of service and support. Not all companies have these, but most corporations will when they are providing technical support to people. As an employee of the company, your job is to honor the SLA that you have with the customer. An SLA is typically a legal agreement that contains the responsibilities and liabilities of all parties involved. Some of the contents of an SLA might be response time guarantees, often based on the type of call and level of service agreement. So you might have various levels of service level agreements. You might have the platinum, the gold, and the normal free tech support customers. Equipment and or software that will be supported. Where service will be provided. So one service level agreement might state that they have to bring their computers in. The next one up, you might come to their home to fix their computers or office. Preventative maintenance features that you will perform. Diagnostics. Parts availability, equivalent parts, or if you're just going to replace the entire machine. Cost and penalties. Time of service availability, for example, 24 hours a day or business hours, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. There may be exceptions to the SLA. Some exceptions may include the ability of the customer to upgrade the level of service or the ability to escalate to a management for review. Escalation to management should be reserved for special situations. For example, a long-standing customer or a customer from a very large company may have a problem that falls outside of the parameters stated in their service level agreement with your service company. In these cases, your management may choose to support the customer for customer relation reasons, because they really want the business of that big company or they want to keep that long-standing customer happy. Can you think of any other circumstances where it might be good to escalate a call to management? Okay. It's important to follow your company's business policies. You would not want to make a promise to a customer that you cannot keep. You should also have a good understanding of all rules governing employees. Read your handbook. They don't just give it to you for decoration. Most call centers have very specific rules on how to handle customer calls. Maximum time on a call, example 15 minutes before you're going to escalate it. Maximum call time in queue, so you want to pick up the calls as fast as you can. Example, you don't want to leave somebody in the queue for more than 3 minutes. Number of calls per day, example, you need to take a minimum of 30 calls per day. Rules on passing calls to other technicians, example, only when absolutely necessary and not without that technician's permission. Rules on what you can and cannot promise to the customer. See that the customer's SLA for the details of what levels of service you are allowed to give to the customer. When to follow the SLA and when to escalate to management. There are also rules to cover general daily activities of employees. Arrive at your workstation early enough to become prepared, usually about 15 minutes early. Do not exceed the allowed number and length of breaks. Do not take a break or go to lunch if there's a call on the board. Do not take a break or go to lunch at the same time as other technicians. Stagger breaks among technicians. A lot of companies do that. Do not leave an ongoing call to take a break or go to lunch. Make sure another technician is available if you have to leave. If no other technician is available, check with the customer to see if you can call them back later, possibly in the morning. Do not show favoritism to certain customers. Do not take another technician's calls without permission. Do not talk negatively about the capabilities of another technician, even if they really do suck. Those are just examples. The rules at your call center may vary if you are working at a call center. Talking quickly about ethics and legal aspects of working with computer technology. Also, always have respect for customers as well as their property. This includes any information or data that may be accessible, such as passwords, emails, phone records, receipts, hard copies of files, information or data left on the desk. Before you access a computer account, including the administrator account, you should get the permission of the customer. Before you touch any computer, you should always get the permission of the customer. If you document private information, usernames, and passwords, you must keep it confidentially or probably destroy it. Divulging any customer information to anyone else is not only unethical, but is probably illegal. Legal details of customer information are usually covered under the SLA. Do not send unsolicited messengers to a customer. Do not send unsolicited mass mailings or chain letters to the customer. No, the customer is probably not interested in your dirty jokes. Never send forged anonymous emails. All of these activities are considered unethical and probably are considered illegal. There are several computer-related activities that are not only unethical, but are definitely illegal. Be aware that this is not an exhaustive list. There are whole four-year degrees on computer law. Do not make any changes to system software or hardware configurations without customers' permission. Probably make them sign something. Do not access a customer's or coworker's accounts, private files, or email messages without permission. Do not install, copy, or share digital content, including software, music, text, images, and videos, in violation of copyright and/or software agreements or applicable federal, state, and local law. Yeah, pirating at work is absolutely 100% not cool at all. Don't do it. You can get in so much trouble, lose your job, and possibly go to jail. Do not use a customer's IT resources for commercial purposes. So don't go and take all their printer paper, and don't print off a bunch of brochures because you have access to their computer and all of their paper looks really nice. Do not make customers' IT resources available to unauthorized users. So you have the wireless key of that coffee shop that you set up. Don't give it to all your friends so that they can get free Wi-Fi whenever they're in the mall. Keep customer-sensitive information confidential. Do not knowingly use a customer's company resources for illegal activities. Criminal or illegal use may include obscenity, pornography, threats, harassment, copyright infringement, universal trademark infringement, defamation, theft, identity theft, and unauthorized access. And it's very important as a technician to know the copyright laws in your state or country. If you're unsure of them, that might be something you would want to research to make sure you do everything to the letter of the law. We're all pretty familiar with a call center environment, aren't we? We all know what that is. Perfect. Does anyone have any questions on what a call center is, how things work in a call center? Fair enough. All right. We're talking about help desk software. Your company may have software that is used to track and log your calls. Make sure you know how to use it. And it's going to be different for each company. Your call center will have its own business policies regarding call priority. The calls may be named, defined, and prioritized different for each call center. So you might have people with a certain level of service calls, one number, and they must be taken first before anyone else's calls. A level one technician's responsibilities may be known as a level one analyst, dispatcher, or incident screener. You're the triage person. Your primary responsibilities are gathering pertinent information from the customer. You will have to document all information in a ticket or work order. This is probably handled in your help desk software. Some problems are very simple to resolve, and you can usually take care of these without escalating the order to a level 2 technician. You're going to probably be working mostly with software. If it requires opening the case, that is a level 2 technician's job. Often, these problems do require the expertise of a level 2 technician. In these cases, you must be able to translate a customer's problem description into a suitable one or two sentence description that is entered into the work order. This translation is important so that the other technician can quickly understand the situation without having to make the customer repeat themselves over and over again. And you will get to do some of these customer sheets, I think probably in later chapters, and I think you've already done a couple. The level 2 technician's responsibilities, they may be known as the product specialists or technical support personnel. The level 2 technician is usually more knowledgeable about technology or has been working with the company for a long period of time. An escalated work order is usually about a problem that a level 1 technician could not solve within 10 minutes. The level 2 technician receives the escalated work order with the description of the problem. They then call the customer back to ask any additional questions and resolve the problem. Here's a list of guidelines to tell you when to escalate to a more experienced technician. They're generic. You should follow your company's business problems for policy for problem escalation. Escalate problems that require opening the computer case, as I said. Escalate problems that require installation of application, operating systems, or drivers. Escalate problems that will take a long time to step a customer through, like CMOS changes. Escalate down calls, where the entire network is down and a more experienced tech may be able to resolve the issue faster. Problems that require opening up the computer case will need to be solved by a level 2 technician. This is not true in all companies, but most of them. Level 2 technicians can use remote diagnostic software to connect to customer computers in order to update drivers and software, access the operating system, check BIOS, and gather other diagnostic information to solve the problem. A lot of this, unfortunately, is now done by level 1 technicians, and this is why it can be quite hard for us to get jobs as level 1 technicians. And that's our lecture. Any questions before we get into a couple of role-playing scenarios here?
Do we want to do the things next week? Because have we got enough people to do role-playing this week?
You guys want to hold off on it and do it next week? Fair enough. Yeah. We can run that next week. Because we'll probably have a couple more people. Any other questions, comments? All right. Well, cool. We'll dismiss for today.